We're Barty Haugen and Linda Haugen.
And tonight we're going to tell you about a retreat center in Scotland called Iona. Marty and I met at a retreat center in England and 17 years ago, and since then we've been wanting to go to Iona. And this last May we had the opportunity to do that. So we want to tell you about it, something about its history, something about how the community works there and how the community has moved out into the world, and also about how it compares with Holden Village. To get to Iona, you have to go to the west coast of Scotland and take a ferry. Take a ferry to the Isle of Mull, and then a bus across the Isle of Mull. Mull has a one-lane road all the way across it, so we drove in a 20th century bus and a 14th century road across the island, and then we took another ferry to the little isle of Iona.
Yeah. It's like Holden in the sense that it's not on the way to anywhere. And it's a pilgrimage to go there.
Are you going to show slides, Marie?
Yeah.
Just a few later, though.
Just a few, and they're not very good.
The way that Iona was described to us by people from Scotland was as a thin place. And when they describe Iona as a thin place, what they mean is that there's a very thin barrier between the material and the spiritual worlds there. And it has a long history of being a spiritual center, a place that's hard to get to, but a place that's been a center of learning and spirituality for centuries. Marty's going to tell you something about the history.
There's been a religious community on the island of Iona since 563 at least. 563, St. Columba landed on the Isle of Iona on the south side. Columba was a disciple of St. Patrick's, and it's a real suspicion that he probably was a Celtic druid, and he was converted to Christianity by Patrick. Now, they have an incredible library at Iona about Celtic spirituality and Celtic history, so I just devoured every book I could find. What I learned was the druids were probably those Celts who could read and write and knew medicine and lore and law. And so Columba probably was a pretty high up prince in the Celtic tribes that lived in Ireland. And that when he decided to become a Christian, he really got on the outs, because the Christians that Patrick brought in also learned to read and write and were real threats to the Druids. So either Columba decided to leave on his own, or he was thrust out of the country. But for one reason or another, he went from Ireland to Iona. Here's a better map. This was provided us by the Nairns. And here's the... where is Mull?
Further.
Thank you. How did I get lost here?
Took a wrong turn.
There it is. Here's the Isle of Mull. So you took a ferry to the Isle of Mull and took a bus across it, and there's Iona. Now it seems sort of out in the middle of nowhere. What we were told, though, is back in the 6th century, when water travel was the way people got around, Iona was not on the outskirts of things, but it was rather on main pathways of travel, at least as much as they had in those days. Should I wear that?
Yeah.
Oh.
You don't need to wear it, you just lay it down.
Oh, good. Okay.
You have to wear it.
I have to wear it?
Maybe this year you have to wear it. Last year.
Okay. This year you wear it. Okay. Anyway, it was 563, he started a Celtic Christian community, and the Celtic church, the Roman church, came into England and got up to about here, and the Celtic church stayed really strong and wasn't so Romanized. So there's a very difference between Celtic Christianity and Roman Christianity. And the difference was the Celts had a wonderful poetic love of creation and God's presence in creation. How many heard Robert's blessing last night? He said it was an Irish blessing. I'm sure it is, but the Celts travel back and forth. And what struck me was when we were leaving Iona in a rowboat, I saw that blessing carved inside the rowboat on the shore of Iona, which really, it was the prayers of the common people. And that's where the Celtic tradition has been preserved up here. You find wonderful Celtic melodies and Celtic poems and Celtic blessings that are filled with earthy humor, very earthy, filled with love of creation and delight in ordinary things, like St. Patrick's breastplate, I rise, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ within me. That kind of rhythmic beauty is very present in the Celtic language and the Celtic spirituality. Okay. Yeah, he said this year where they were wearing them.
Now it's not broken. The most important.
So the Celts were here until about 900, and Columba was the first real leader, and they became missionaries for all of Scotland. They worshipped out of doors, they had beehive huts, but part of their love of creation was to worship outside, and you still see that love of creation. About 900 to 1,000, the Norse came through and overran Iona at least three times, and finally wiped them out. And they fled back to Ireland. And then 1,100 or 1,200, the Benedictines order came up and started a monastery. And the structures that are Iona now were the Benedictine monastery. But in the people in the surrounding area, the Celtic influence was still very strong. The Benedictines were very much book people of knowledge, people of wisdom, and their buildings were square and very much like learning places. And it was interesting because you'll see in the pictures there's a courtyard in Iona that's a Benedictine cloister, which is sort of like making creation into a square. It's just the opposite of the way the Celtic people sort of worship. Iona doesn't have any trees at all. It's just a 3 mile by 1 mile island, and it hasn't any practical value at all. But from earliest times, it's had a very strong religious significance. And just outside the main building, we'll show you in the slides, there's a hill called a tumul, in which there are buried 40 Scottish kings, 7 Norse kings, and 5 Irish kings. It's been an island where people were taken. It's been a sacred island for hundreds and hundreds of years. And what Linda said about a thin place, that atmosphere permeates the place and the whole spirit of the place. Anyway, the Benedictines had a monastery there and a nunnery there until about 1600, and they were abandoned after the Church of England, Church of Scotland threw out all the Catholics, or at least, you know, drove them underground. The island belonged to a duke, I forget his name, we didn't do enough research, but it belonged to one of the Scottish dukes, and in the 20th century he gave it to the Church of Scotland to do whatever they wanted to. Sort of just like the mining company given to the Lutheran Church, so they had this sort of derelict place. The parallels are really interesting, and I found it fascinating. And a man named George MacLeod, is that right? George MacLeod, isn't he very famous in Scotland?
Yeah.
Extremely well-known person.
Very well-known. I only just heard about him 2 months ago. Somebody asked me to read C.S. Lewis, and George MacLeod was C.S. Lewis.
Don't undermine all my talk.
Was that a wrong one?
Wrong man.
Shouldn't ask me anything.
Okay, I'll remember that. George MacLeod was well known in the 30s. He was aware that when the Depression hit Scotland, were you going to talk about this part?
I can.
You can talk about this part. Okay, here, you got to wear this.
When the Depression hit Scotland, there was a lot of unemployment and a lot of poverty, and there was a separation between the church and reality in many people's minds and hearts. And George MacLeod's idea was to give work to many of the unemployed laborers and craftspeople by rebuilding Iona. So what they did was form a group of people who had the skills to do stone masonry and build strong and beautiful buildings, and also join them with a group of theologians and preachers and church people the church people and the theologians and the philosophers worked as the laborers for the craftspeople, and that's how they worked during the day, with the theologians and the preachers carrying the cement and moving the bricks for the craftspeople. And then in the evening, they would talk about the gospel and the work that they were doing together and how it related to life, their own lives, and life in general. And out of that common experience of the working people and the church people grew sort of the thrust of the Iona community now, where everybody works together and everybody also shares in the worship process at 9 in the morning and 9 in the evening. And the worship has grown out of their life in the community, and then it's also spread into the community of Scotland and into other communities in the world.
Originally, the program that they had was a program for pastors and working men. It was all men until, I think, about the mid-50s. It would be working class men and pastors would meet to have dialogue. Since then, they've opened up, and their program is very much like, I think, Holden's. It's a smaller scale, 200 people total, maybe 50 staff. And they will focus on one thing. For a week, they'll do Celtic spirituality, and that'll be the talk for a week. And then they'll do women's issues or justice issues or poverty issues. Another wonderful parallel is the issues that they hold up are, and it comes out of their Celtic tradition, care for the dispossessed and the poor, a world church, a sense of ecology, and caring for creation, and inclusivity is real important issues for them. They eat fairly simply, they eat in common. Lynn and I had a room in the monastery with hot water bottles at the end of the bed, which were functional. I mean, they were essential. It was cold. Should we show you the slides? I'll show you. We had two cameras. We had a good camera and a bad camera. We took prints with a good camera and slides with a bad one. And we appear in a lot of them. This is the community of Oban, which is on the west coast of Scotland, right about here. This is the last jumping off point on Scotland. It's a fishing village, and if you want to go to, when we went to, part of the reason we went to Iona is that I really love the music. I'm going to play some for you later. I have an English composer friend, a woman who sends me music that she collects from England, and she had been sending me music from Iona, and I loved the music. Beautiful. And I said, I want to meet the composer. The composer's name is John Bell. He lives in Glasgow now. He's lived in Iona for many years. And he met us at the Glasgow airport and took the train with us from Glasgow to Oban on the coast. That's the ferry on the right to take. It's just a fishing boat. This is John Bell, who composes the Iona music. An interesting man. He works in the community in Glasgow, doing a lot of social justice work. He travels around Great Britain and Scotland doing workshops on liturgy. This is Linda. This is leaving Oban, going to the Isle of Mull. This is on the other end. This is the second ferry. In the distance is Iona. You can see it's just very small and very sparse. This is real washed out. I'm sorry you can't see it well. The island is about 3 miles by 1 mile. This is the community of about 100 people, I think, who live on the island. That's it. This is the church. It's a 13th century church. Around it is a cloister. Up here is a nunnery that's in ruins that was built around the same time. And I will show you pictures of the nunnery so you can see how much renovation actually had to be done to get this back to its normal state. That's at Iona. On the right is the church, on the left is the buildings of the cloister. They're all washed out. It's a brilliantly colored island. It's just greens and deep blues. I'm sorry that we don't have the colors like it is. It's stunning and beautiful. This is the other angle. The church is a 13th century church for the most part. It was built between the 12th century and the 15th century at different stages. Out front to the left, you see that rocky pile, not in the foreground, but in the background to the left. That hill is supposedly where Columba had his cell.
The cross in front of it is a 14th century cross. This is the nunnery. This gives you an idea of how much work the Masons had to do when they came upon, because this is what Iona looked like. It was, because this building hasn't been renovated. And this is the front. The one difference between this and Holden, of course, is the time is so different. This cross is a 9th century cross. It was in the late 800s, that cross. Now, it's a replica, because the original was broken in a storm about 50 years ago, and they're fixing it. But it's identical. They'll have the other one back up in a couple of years. This is from the 13th or 14th century. This is a road from the original monastery the Benedictines took. This is Columba's shrine, where supposedly Columba's bones were after he died. Of course, this wasn't here then, because it was before the Norse. But there was a shrine there. Now he's buried back in Ireland. It's beautiful fieldstone. Up here is a little peephole where the monks could look when raiders were attacking. It was a real sort of fortress place.
What is the large structure to the right in the background?
That's a house, maybe an inn. There's a couple inns on the island for people to come to visit. Oh, good. The top one is forward. Can you push it forward once? Thank you. You see it? Yeah. This is giving you an idea of some of the work being done on the church. It's continually being done. They use volunteers like Holden. Go to the next one, Ingrid. I thought you'd like to see it. That's a volunteer at Iona working on the back wall. Yeah, continuous work. It's so often it looked just like, you know, sort of a Scottish version of Holden. Okay. This is interesting. This is the cloister, the Benedictine cloister that dates from the 13th century. This has been rebuilt too. It was completely in ruins. And it really represents sort of medieval Christianity, in which you created a world surrounded by walls, a very artificial creation. Well, what was placed in the center is a statue that was given to Iona in the 60s. The statue is one of three. The original was done for a Catholic church in France. And the statue is, I guess, of the Virgin Mary. Ironically enough, it's the woman with the moon and the stars from Revelation. And this Presbyterian church had to make some kind of justification for the presence of this statue in their courtyard. But it does really fit with their Celtic spirituality. One thing that I realized when I went back and studied the Celtic Christianity was that it was a goddess religion, not a god religion. It saw God as female, which I thought was fascinating. And the shape, could you go to the next one, Ingrid? That's another shot. That's the church tower. You can see the cloister. One more. What I find wonderful about it is the feminine shape and the woman with her arms raised and the lamb underneath. And there you can see the stars on the side. It really is. It's stunning because it captures the history of Iona, the sort of the Benedictine influence on the outside, but that is really a Celtic statue. And they talk about it now in terms of Celtic statue. They weren't quite at that point when they put it in. But this is the first view you have when you come in the door of the retreat center. You look through the doorway, which is the way I shot it, and that's the statue you see. That might be the last. Oh, no. Is there one more? We want you to see some flowers in the island. I think that's the last one. It's a beautiful island. It's a rugged beauty. It's not a gentle beauty. But that's very typical of the bracken and the rocks of the island. Yeah, you can turn it off. That's it. That's the one where you can see something.
I remember those.
Next year. You want to talk about the extended community or the community at all? We covered.
I think there are opportunities for volunteers at Iona, just like there are opportunities here at Holden. People come and stay for 3 weeks and volunteer, or 2 to 3 years. And they run the community for guests. There's a wonderful bookstore. There's a pottery shop. There's a coffee shop across the road that serves desserts, which they don't serve in the dining hall. they eat low on the food chain. But everybody works and everybody serves each other. There are volunteers there from all over the world. and it's seemed like
the Cloud Center.
Oh yes, and there's a new building that they had just done in the last few years across the road too, so that there are more comfortable 20th century kind of accommodations available also. While we were there, there was a group of school children in Great Britain. The children will have a school holiday and their teachers will take them for a week or two on holiday. And there was a group of school children from England, there was a group of girls from a private girls' school in Scotland there, and then there was also a group of what they called youthful offenders. The juvenile justice system had taken these kids up there, and there was a real mix of programming going on for all of those kids.
That's an important part of Iona's programming. They have a continuous program where youthful offenders are brought to there to give them a sense of an experience of that community. Can you move on to some of the music? John Bell, like I mentioned, wrote a lot of the music, and I'm going to play you a couple tapes. They have a center, like we mentioned, in Glasgow, which is, I suppose, if you know of St. Martin's Table in Minneapolis, it's analogous to that. It's an outgrowth of the community. You can belong to the Iona community as a member, sort of take membership in the community, which means that you tithe and you pray for issues in the world each day, you work in community service, and you live simply and you pledge to monitor how you spend your resources and how you help the world use its resources. There's about 300 of them around the world.
This community near Glasgow meets weekly like a base Christian community and discusses the gospel, and then John and Graham, two of the men in the community, will write music that comes out of the discussion, and then they'll bring the music back in the next few weeks, and the community will try it out and refine it and change it. But a lot of this music that has come out of Iona has come out of the grassroots, base Christian community kind of approach.
His principles are, on the recording you'll hear, not trained musicians. He uses members of the community to sing. It's really important to him that the average person can sing this music. He bases a lot of it on Scottish folk melodies. What is really stunning is his text. I'm going to play one song and then I'm going to get you to sing it with me so you can get a sense of really hearing the text, because you may not hear it well. This is a song called Dance and Sing. It goes by very fast and there's a thick Scottish brogue, so you have to listen.
Dance and sing, all the earth gracious is God, and the sense you love and care everywhere, God of reckless sense. Shooting stars and sunset shapes the drama of creation, light and flash and moonbeam share a common derivation. Dance and sing, all the earth gracious is God, and the sense you love and care everywhere, God of reckless sense.
There's a stretch and torn and sore and contrast and confusion. Feet of sea and mountain soar, and nothing is illusion.
Dance and sing, all the earth nature is the hand that sent you love and care everywhere, for the purpose sent you. All the flight and plumes and crawls display an animation. None can emulate a change, for each has its own station.
Dance and sing, all the earth nature is the hand that sent you love and care everywhere, for the purpose sent you. Brother, man, and sister, woman, born of dust and passion, praise the one who calls you friends and makes you in his fashion.
Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is God, and the sense you love and care everywhere, for the purpose sent you. Kiss of life and touch of death, suggest an imperfection, create the moon and cross and soon cry out for resurrection. Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is God, and the sense you love and care everywhere, for the purpose sent you.
I wrote the words down so you can hear. I'm going to teach you the chorus. It goes like this. Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is the hand that tends you, love and care everywhere, God of purpose sends you. Can you get it? Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is the hand that tends you, love and care everywhere, God of purpose sends you. Yeah, it's an Irish Scottish tune, and it sort of takes a couple listen. Let me sing it one more time for you. Maybe I'll cheat. It
goes like this. Dance and sing.
Lightning flash and moonbeam share a common derivation. Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is the hand that tends you, love and care everywhere, God a purpose sends you. Brother, man, and sister, woman, born of dust and passion, praise the one who calls you friends and makes you in your fashion. Dance and sing, all the earth, gracious is the hand that tends you, love and care everywhere, God a purpose sends you. I won't go any farther. A lot of words. That's typical of their songs. I'm going to play one more. This is from the prologue of John. Do you all know, in the beginning was the Word was with God. This is his text. I hope you can understand it. I didn't get a translation of this. It's beautiful, though.
Before the world began, one word was there. From death in God he was rooted in care. By him all things were made, in him was love displayed. Through him God's hope and said, I am for you.
John is a superb poet. John and Graham also write scripts and sketches that they use in their worship and for their sessions. And I wanted to do a couple with Linda because it shows some of the Celtic influence in it. You'll hear earthy humor and a very down-to-earth approach to spirituality. The tapes and the music books and these sketches all come out of their publishing house, Wild Goose Publications. This is their logo. Wild Goose is the Celtic symbol for the Holy Spirit. And they like Wild Goose because they think the dove is so predictable and tame, and they think the Holy Spirit's a lot. They preferred the idea of a wild goose. So that's where that came from. This one's called God and Man in Woman. I think you're A and I'm B.
In the beginning, God made man. He was so disappointed that he tried again. And the next time, he made woman.
Eve, the first woman, was a vegetarian. She liked apples and ate the wrong one. Men have been suspicious of vegetarians ever since.
Noah didn't eat apples. He was a man, so he drank alcohol. In fact, he drank so much alcohol that one day his sons found their old man completely sozzled and lying in the nude. Women have been suspicious of alcohol ever since.
Lot didn't eat apples or drink wine. He just lived in a city where the men didn't know who they fancied. So God told him to leave the city, and so he did. God said, "Don't look back, for I'm going to burn down the city." So Lot didn't look back, but his wife did, and she turned into a pillar of salt. Women have never looked back since.
Delilah didn't eat apples, drink wine, or look back. She was a hairdresser. Samson didn't know that. But while he was resting his macho muscles, Delilah cut his hair and took his strength away. Men have avoided being bald ever since.
St. Paul didn't know Eve, Noah, Lot, or Delilah, but he did know some women. and those he did must have given him bad memories. Because he told them not to speak in church, not to go to church without a hat, and to always obey their husbands. Paul also said that men shouldn't get married unless they were unable to control themselves. Men have been unable to control themselves ever since.
But Jesus was different. He was strong, but he cried. He even cried in front of other men. He knew that some women had bad reputations, but that didn't keep him beside them. He loved his disciples, who were all men, and he wasn't afraid to tell them that he loved them. And though he was never married, he was always surrounded by women who, at his death, were more faithful to him than the men. Jesus didn't make a fuss about who was who or who was what. He said that everyone who loved him was his mother, his sister, his brother.
Thank God for Jesus. That's real typical of their sketches. That's typical of Celtic type humor as well. A little side, we went first to Iona and then we went to a conference in England, and the Scottish group came down and did this sketch, so you just heard, and some of the people were highly offended by it. And there was a real difference between English humor and Celtic humor, I found out. The other one is called Seven Hard Days. We're going to get some help with this one. You want to be A or B?
I'll be A. Okay. In the beginning, it was very, very dark. So God spoke. And when she spoke, she said,
I can't see a thing. Let's have some light on the matter.
And so there was light. And there was darkness, too, just for contrast.
A good day's work,
said God. And that was the end of the first day.
On the second day, God thought you'd do something about the plumbing. There was water everywhere. So God had a brainwave.
I'll make some dry land,
said God, and so she did. She said,
shoo,
to the waters, and they shooed. Some became seas, some became clouds, some became puddles.
Not bad for a beginner,
said God. And that was the end of the second day.
On the third day, God thought she'd make the earth look beautiful. So she winked at the earth, and the earth winked at her. Out came shoots, and out of the shoots came flowers and corn and trees. God made jaggy nettles and stingy nettles. She made roses that smell like bath salts, and lupins that have no smell at all. She made trees with apples on them which would fall to the ground and help thinkers to have deep thoughts. She made trees with smooth bark so that Joseph could write how he loved Mary. And when God saw all this loveliness, she smiled a happy smile.
Time for bed,
said God.
And that was the end of the third day.
On the fourth day, God thought she'd do something about the lighting. She needed lights to come on and help the plants to grow, but she also needed lights to go off and help the plants to sleep. So she made the sun to make white people brown and brown people browner. She made the moon to give cats something to sing at. She made a lot of wee fairy lights called stars, and she switched them on and off, on and off.
This is fun,
said God, and that was the end of the fourth day.
On the fifth day, God decided that she'd have a bit more action. So she said to the waters,
you're going to have a moving experience.
And she filled the sea with fishes, wiggly octopuses, and jellyfish, hoping to find a use for them one day. And she said to the sky,
you're going to have a moving experience.
And in a minute it was filled with wings, eagles and swans and sparrows, and the odd elephant which didn't know what its ears were for.
I'm amazing when it comes to getting things to work,
said God. And that was the end of the fifth day.
On the sixth day, God looked at creation. The birds sang for her. The fish swam for her. The trees waved at her in the wind.
Time we had some light on,
said God, and so it started. She made creepy crawlies to curl up inside lettuces. She made wiggly snakes to lie under rocks. She made chimpanzees which would drink tea on television one day. She made animals with long necks and paisley patterned pajamas so they could see where the balls went when if they ever played golf at bedtime. And they all jumped and romped and scrambled over the earth. It was like a circus without a ringmaster.
Wait a minute,
said God.
Who's going to take charge of all this? Who's going to pull out the weeds, smell the roses, and tell the chimpanzees to behave themselves?
Then God had another brainwave.
I'll make man.
Said God.
No, I won't. That would be sexist. I'll make woman and man.
So God made women and men, big and small, brown and white, bald and curly, long nose and short nose, with and without freckles. And then God said,
just for fun, I'll dare them to get on with each other.
God looked around and then sat down. She was very happy with all she saw. She was also very tired. So she went to bed, and that was the end of the sixth day.
And she slept and slept right through the seventh day.
Creation fairly takes it out of you,
said God. We wanted to do the sketches because we thought those would probably give you a better flavor for the place than trying to just talk about it. We've got a few minutes. I know we just went real fast. Do you have questions about the place at all? Barb?
Well, could you just say some of the nuts and bolts, maybe you said that earlier, about how a person goes there as a guest, say, and how much it costs me, and just stuff like that, how I would go there, or anybody who wanted to visit there.
I have the address. You have to write. They have a sliding scale. Have you heard of the band UB40? It's a Scottish band. That's the unemployment form in Scotland. And if you're on unemployment in Scotland, you can go to Iona for practically free. They're still really committed to the working class of Scotland. So the cheapest is for people who are unemployed in Scotland. Then the working class pay a little bit more, and then if it's a sliding scale. So we would, from the U.S., would pay based on our income, most likely. But for most Americans who can get over to Scotland, they can usually afford to pay the most expensive rates unless they... find a cheap student fare.
But so, you can also go there and work as a volunteer.
Yeah.
You could just write and make arrangements for that.
It's very much like Holden in that respect. And we've got the address if you're interested in writing to them. I found it fascinating to go to for just a few days. If you go there when there's a program going on, you can write and get a brochure and find out what the programs are. I'd love to go back when they do a whole week on Celtic spirituality. But they do all kinds of issues. In the winter, there aren't programs going. And it's pretty quiet if you want a real retreat, but it's also blustery and cold. It really is exposed. Yes.
Are the books available in the United States or only through the Iona community?
Well, right now they're only available through the Iona community. I know of at least three publishers that are in a hurry to try and get it. These will probably come out through Hope Publishing in the next year. But if you want them in the next 6 months, you should probably, we can give you the address. You can write directly to their community. Hope Publishing is probably going to carry the text. And there's two music publishers that are sort of negotiating to get the music rights. So I don't know what's going to happen. But right now, it's not for sale yet in the U.S. anywhere. So I can tell you how to get it if you're interested. Yes?
Do they have a structured pattern of daily worship?
Yeah.
Tell them the topics.
Well, they had the church. I wish I had a picture of the church. It's a stunning church. It's like a cathedral nave, but it's small. And they have a pattern of worship, and I'm trying to remember it. A Tuesday night when we were there, it was a service of healing. And every Tuesday night they have a service of healing. And while the community is praying, at that same time, members of the Iona community around the world have been sent a prayer list each week. So they're praying in union with the community at that service. It was, I have to admit, growing up in a Scandinavian Lutheran community in southern Minnesota, I wasn't, as a child or even growing up, really much into touchy liturgy. And I've been suspicious of service of healing, and this was beautiful. It was just stunning. The sense of the whole community coming, laying hands on these people. It took about an hour, and there were about, I don't know, 100 people there. But it was a very powerful service. Thursday night or Friday night, I forget which, they have Eucharist, and they take the dining hall tables and bring them into the church and run them down the center aisle, and everyone sits along the table and has supper and then Eucharist at these tables. We didn't get to share that with them, but I've seen pictures of it and heard people describe it, and it sounds beautiful. They have prayer every night. The first night we were there, it was a prayer on, it was a Vespers. They always have it in the evenings. They don't call it Vespers, but it essentially is. And it was on peacemaking. And some youthful volunteers had gotten to do it, and they had played some rock and roll music by UB40 on the tape machine through the, and it was really jarring in this 14th century church to hear the rock and roll music. So they really do the whole gamut of it. They have some beautiful chant and wonderful flute music, and the next night you might hear this tape of rock and roll music. But it's very creative, and they do have a regular pattern. Every night they have worship. Other questions? If you don't have any other questions, we can let you go early. If you want to get the address from us, maybe we should put the address up here.
The tapes are available there too?
Mm-hmm. You have to order them through them. They'll send you a catalog. I'll bring the tapes over here. You can see the names. I've got about three other tapes. I'll play you one more tape song. John Bell is really committed to the idea of a world church. And he went to a conference for the World Council of Churches and heard music from around the world. And he painstakingly wrote all this music down. A lot of it had never been written down. And sought out all the composers around the world. And has collected it. It's interesting to me that Iona, which is way in the middle of nowhere, has become a sort of a focal point for collecting world music. We did a couple of them at the Eucharist last Sunday that I had gotten off the tape. The book isn't available, so I told John when I left, until you get the book, I'm going to just use it. But the book will be coming out. It's called Many and Great. And here's a song from South Africa and then a song from Jamaica with the same group of Scottish singers. I think it's time for this first song from the
King. Stand, oh, stand firm. Stand, oh stand firm, stand, oh stand firm, and see what the Lord can do.
Oh, you people, stand very firm.
Stand, oh stand firm, stand, oh stand firm, stand, oh stand firm, and see what the Lord can do.
Oh, South Africa, stand very firm.
Stand, oh stand firm.
Holden and Iona, because I think they have a lot of the same values and
could probably have a lot to offer each other.